कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोध नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोध नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुन तीरावन माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी Krishna. So nice to be back. Thank you again for this opportunity. Today we're going to read from Canto number 3, Chapter 1, Text 10 to Text 12. For Text 10 and 11, I'll just read the Sanskrit and translation alone, and then Text 12 will do call and response. यदोपहूत भवनां प्रविष्टो मन्त्राय पृष्ट किल पूर्वजेन अताहतान् मन्त्रदृशां वरीयान् यन्मन्त्रिणो वैदुरिकां वदन्ति When Vidura was invited by his elder brother Dhritarashtra for consultation, he entered the house and gave instructions, which were exactly to the point. His advice is well known, and instructions by Vidura are approved by expert ministers of state. Purport. Political suggestions by Vidura are known as expert, just as in modern times, Pandit Chanakya is considered the authority in good counsel in both political and moral instructions. Text 11. Ajata Shastra Pratiyachadayam Titikshato Durvisaham Tavagha Sahanujo Yatra Vrikodari Tarahi Svasan Rushayat Pamalam Bibeshi. Vidura said, "You must now return the legitimate share to Yudhishthira, who has no enemies and who has been forbearing through untold sufferings due to your offenses. He is waiting with his younger brothers, amongst whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing heavily like a snake. Surely you are afraid of him." And text 12, we'll do this call and response. Partam Studevo Bhagavan Mukundo. Partam Studevo Bhagavan Mukundo. Grihitavan Shakshiti Deva Deva. Grihitavan Shakshiti Deva Deva. Aste Svapuryam Yadu Deva Devo. Aste Svapuryam Yadu Deva Devo. Vinirjita Sheshanri Deva Deva. Partam Stu Devo Bhagavan Mukundo. Grihitavan Shakshiti Deva Deva. Aste Svapuryam Yadu Deva Devo. Vinirjita Sheshanri Deva Deva. Please chant.
Deva Deva.
The sons of Pitta, Kunti. Two. But. Deva. The Lord Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Mukunda. Sri Krishna who awards liberation. Grihi Davan. Has taken up. Sa. With. Shiti Devan Deva, the Brahmanas and the demigods, Aste, is present, Svapuriyam, along with his family, Yadudeva Deva, worshipped by the royal order of the Yadu dynasty, Vinir Jita. Who have been conquered, Ashesha, unlimited, Nirdeva, kings, Deva, Lord. Translation. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has accepted the sons of Pritha as his kinsmen, and all the kings of the world are with Lord Sri Krishna. He is present in his home with all his family members, the kings and princes of the Yadu dynasty, who have conquered an unlimited number of rulers, and he is their lord. Purport. Vidura gave Dhritarashtra very good counsel regarding political alliance with the sons of Pritha, the Pandavas. The first thing he said was that Lord Krishna was intimately related with them as their cousin. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is worshipable by all Brahmanas and demigods who are the controllers of the universal affairs. Besides that, Lord Krishna and his family members, the royal order of the Yadu dynasty, were the conquerors of all kings of the world. The Kshatriyas used to fight the kings of various dominions and kidnap their beautiful princess daughters after conquering their relatives. This system was laudable because the Kshatriyas and the princesses would be married only on the basis of the chivalry of the conquering Kshatriya. All the young princes of the Yadu dynasty married the daughters of other kings in this way, by chivalrous force, and thus they were conquerors of all the kings of the world. Vidura wanted to impress upon his elder brother that fighting with the Pandavas was fraught with many dangers, because they were supported by Lord Krishna, who had conquered, even in his childhood, demons like Kamsa and Jarasandha, and demigods like Brahma and Indra. Therefore, all universal power was behind the Pandavas. Om Ajnana Timrandasya Vanjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Ritam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Krishtaya Bhutmai Shumate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani, Pachayani, Yubisesha, Shunyavadi, Paschatyad, Vishikam. Panjak, Bhagavatru, Vyasya, Kripa, Sindhu, Vyavacha. Patitanam, Pavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Namo Namaha. So with your blessings and permission, I would like to speak a few words on this wonderful topic and section of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a famous Bible verse that I remember I was familiar with when I was in high school. It says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Have you heard this one before? I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And when I was in high school, there was a famous football player with the Florida Gators, and the football, American football, to wear this black under the eye to help with the glare that comes from all the stadium lights. And he had the verse quote on it, I think Philippians 4:13. And I thought it was quite interesting, and especially when someone, you know, is younger and I see someone famous or someone I would look up to in the sports world have that message, because it showed that alone we can't do anything, but with God we can do everything. With empowerment from the Supreme Lord, anything is possible. So it's a universal message. It's something across all cultures. It's cross-cultural, across all religions, that on our own strengths, we really are incapable of doing anything. But on the strengths of the Supreme Lord, even just a drop of his strength, who is unlimited in strength, unlimited in ability, we have the ability to do anything and everything. And that ability ultimately is meant for the service of him, because the ability comes from him. So in this verse, we can see that Vidura is giving very expert guidance. He's realized, he's well situated, he can see everything clearly. He's a devotee of Krishna. And we see these two sides very clearly in Mahabharata. We see the side of the Pandavas, the side of Dharma, the side of devotional service to Krishna, and then we see the side of Adharma, we see the side of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, and the subsequent brothers. And it's this constant battle. And then there's the character of Krishna, and Krishna takes the side of the Pandavas, and it makes the story very interesting. So Dhritarashtra is obviously blind. It's a well-known fact in Mahabharata, but what's more important and shows more than his physical blindness is his spiritual blindness. He cannot actually see the fact that the Supreme Lord is standing there right in front of him. In fact, a few verses ago, it says Krishna came under the, as a messenger of Arjuna, he came to their home of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and begged for peace. It is, let's not go to war. He came with a peace agreement, but they just laughed it off. To them, it didn't mean anything. And so we can see which family had the empowerment of Krishna, and it was clearly the Pandavas. And what was the effect of that empowerment? Well, in the verse it says that the Pandavas, or really any of the kings that took shelter of Krishna, were so great, they were conquerors of the whole world, because through their chivalrous acts, they were conquering every kingdom and taking their princesses to marry. And this way they had so much power and ability. And this last line from the purport captures it very nicely. Srila Prabhupada states, therefore all universal power was behind the Pandavas. So today I want to speak a little bit on this topic of empowerment, and empowerment in our own life. There was full empowerment behind the Pandavas, and there was no empowerment behind the Kaurava army and behind Dhritarashtra specifically. And Vidura played this very important role where he was literally begging Dhritarashtra, please give up. Just give up this fighting right now. You're going to lose. Just look at where you are. Look at where they are. They have Krishna on their side. There's no way you're going to win. But of course, he didn't listen. But empowerment is something talked about a lot in Shastra, especially in stories of the Mahabharata, where there's kings intimately connected with the Supreme Lord, and we can see very clearly their power, their kingly ability comes from Krishna. But empowerment is not something that is only of ancient times. It's something that's of modern day. It's something that's available every single day to all of us. In fact, this very book that we read from, these very translations, the very purports we read from every single day, is simply a product of pure empowerment. There's no other way to describe how Srila Prabhupada could have written 60 plus books, so many volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months, so many amazing writing feats that could not have been done without empowerment. Srila Prabhupada came to 26 Second Avenue, you know, from Vrindavan Dham, after completing 3 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, came to the most intense probably the most intense place in all of Earth, Lower East Side, Manhattan, in the 60s. And he was there in whatever room he can rent with crazy people, up all night, translating Srimad Bhagavatam. And one day, a boy by the name of Howard came in, later became Hayagriva. And he was an English editor, English professor, perhaps. And Prabhupada said, "Can you help me? I have some pages of typed manuscripts here. Can you take them home, edit them, and then bring them back to me in the morning?" So happily he did it. He came back and he said, "Swamiji, here are your pages, all done. Do you have any more?" And Prabhupada smiled. "Any more service?" Prabhupada got up, he went to his closet, he opened it, and there were stacks and stacks of typed manuscripts all the way from the bottom to the top. And Howard just looked at the manuscripts, and he nearly fainted. And he said, "Swamiji, it looks like a lifetime of typing." And Prabhupada said, "Many lifetimes of typing." This is empowerment. Many lifetimes of typing. Srila Prabhupada did in just a few years. And one time, Guru Kripa Prabhu also recalls that in the middle of the night, he was serving Srila Prabhupada, so he was in the quarters just next to Prabhupada's room. And Srila Prabhupada called him in the middle of the night, and he was sleeping. So he quickly rushed out of bed, he brushed his eyes out, he got up, and he ran over to Prabhupada's room. And he came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, what can I do?" And Prabhupada said, "Why are you sleeping?" And he thought, "Well, it's the middle of the night. What do you mean, why am I sleeping?" He says, "Srila Prabhupada, it's the middle of the night." And Prabhupada said, "I am not sleeping." And Guru Kripa Prabhu, he responded, "Srila Prabhupada, we've been working all day. We're just resting. We're tired." "I was also working." He left me to say, Guru Kripa Prabhu said, "Prabhupada, I'm not a pure devotee like you." "So why are you not a pure devotee?" He looked at Srila Prabhupada again and said, "Prabhupada, I don't know what to do." And he said, "Go back to sleep." So we're the object of the Lord's mercy. And Prabhupada was so empowered. He was up all night writing. And when even the devotees would work all day, just like Prabhupada would work all day, they would need to sleep at night. It's just necessary for the body. But Prabhupada could push more because he had this empowerment from Krishna. He had a mission to fulfill. And so, empowerment is this constant theme in Shastra. It comes up again and again. It's a very important, critical point that has to be taken note of. And every one of Mahaprabhu's associates were empowered in a different way. This is one of Mahaprabhu's ways of spreading the Sankirtan movement, was that when he was a little bit established, he empowered each of the Goswamis in different ways. One is the Tattvacharya, one is the Namacharya, one is the Rasacharya. And in this way, they spread Lord Chaitanya's movement in different directions and focus on different parts of it. And Prabhupada also did the same thing with his disciples. He took the same mission and he applied it to the modern day. And he used his disciples. His disciples were like his arms and his legs to fulfill certain orders of this mission. And it's very faith-giving, actually, to see this. When we see someone become empowered, someone have a desire to serve a spiritual master, and they have a very deep desire to do so, we see it, it gives us faith, because we think, actually, there's a process that works. It's not just theoretical. I can see, through this spiritual desire, there's empowerment to do something that is possibly beyond someone's ability. And when we receive that empowerment, when we have that desire, that is also faith-giving, because we can see in our own life. There was a theologian once, and who was speaking on Srila Prabhupada's life, and he said that, "Now I can see it, this is a miracle. There's no other way to describe it besides a miracle. Otherwise, how could have one old man with just a few books to sell, how could he introduce a God consciousness movement in a materialistic society? There's no way. Now I can see it's just a miracle." And the miracle was actually that Prabhupada knew how to tap into what the Acharyas wanted. He was able to tap into whatever that prophecy was that the Acharyas gave, whatever the prophecy was that his spiritual master instructed him to do. He took that as his life and soul. And by doing so, the empowerment naturally came. And there's a really nice story. I think it's in Mula Prakriti Prabhu's book, about Srila Prabhupada and Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And one time they were together in the Keshav Jigodiya Mutt, and they were taking prasadam together. And he was sitting next to Sridhar Maharaj taking prasadam, and some guests came into the temple. They saw them eating, and then they just saw them and walked away, a normal occurrence. And Prabhupada noted this, and he turned to Sridhar Maharaj, and he said, "Those guests who just came in, they're thinking, here are two old men sitting and taking prasadam. But what they don't realize is that the future of Mahaprabhu's movement and mission of this world is in the hands of one of these old men." So Prabhupada really knew that there was such a heavy and important instruction that he had tapped into, and he had taken the responsibility for it. And by taking this responsibility, then this empowerment came, and he was able, he could see that this instruction was so potent, the empowerment really, it was held inside of the instruction of the Acharya, inside of the instruction of the spiritual master. That was the source of it. So we look at Srila Prabhupada's life, and we see all this, and we look at the story of the Pandavas, and then we try to automatically, the next thought is, what about me? How do I tap into this instruction of the Acharyas, this source of empowerment, this favor from Krishna, just like the Pandavas had, which allowed him to serve so nicely? And the answer is that to receive this, there's the first preliminary step is desire. Desire to serve. And that has to be so strong and so present. Srila Prabhupada once stated that the art of Krishna consciousness is in the art of desiring. It's in the art of desiring. And there's a really nice quote by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, perhaps you've heard this, in terms of empowerment and desire. He said, "When your desire to serve is beyond your capacity, yet you act without hesitation, that is the moment empowerment occurs." When your desire to serve is beyond your capacity, beyond what you're able to do just on your own strength, yet you act without hesitation because you're dependent on Krishna, that is the moment which empowerment occurs. And in relation to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he was such an empowered being, but there was a moment where he went to see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada encouraged him very much to preach behind the iron curtain. This was one of the services he did. And so he was pushed by Srila Prabhupada to go to communist countries and distribute his books, which is very, very dangerous, especially at that time. Very, very, very dangerous. And Prabhupada came, or Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj came to Srila Prabhupada, or Prabhupada called him over, and devotees were saying, "This is Ghanashyam. He is going behind the iron curtain. He was going to communist countries, Prabhupada, and he's just reading your books." And Srila Prabhupada was so pleased, he called him over and just began rubbing his head in affection. And he said, "You are one of the great grandsons of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur." And he kept rubbing his head. And he said, thank you very much for your service. Thank you so much." Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was just so overwhelmed. I mean, just imagine doing all the service for Prabhupada and he's lovingly, affectionately rubbing your head. So he just began to cry and cry. And he said, "Prabhupada, it's only because of your love. You pushed us. You pushed us. Only because you pushed us are we able to act in such a way." And Prabhupada responded, "Yes, my spiritual master, he pushed me. And I am pushing you. Like this, just as one carriage is pushing another carriage, the whole train goes back to Godhead. My spiritual master pushed me. And I am pushing you. And through this pushing process, we will all go back to Godhead." This is the parampara system. But through the power of the blessings of the spiritual master and his spiritual master and our acharyas, if we tap into it, this chain, this train, we continue the process, we go back to Godhead also, and then we, in turn, give that message to somebody else. And it continues just like that. But it started with a desire, just like this quote from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. His desire to serve was beyond his capacity. I'm sure he never thought that, yeah, I'm able to go to communist countries. I'm the person to do it. But because Prabhupada instructed, and he had such a desire to please him, he was ultimately able. And now look at those countries. Look how other devotees have went also. Opened it up like anything. It just opened up a treasure trove. So the qualification is desire. And so many nice stories. But I think that it's really, when we hear about it in terms of Srila Prabhupada and his disciples, then we can really, really understand empowerment, because so many of you are here, have received instructions from Srila Prabhupada, or carried out certain parts of his mission for so many years. And I can see from your lives that there is empowerment. You're still doing it, and you've affected so many lives along the way. But this story is really, really nice. It's also shows Prabhupada's genius in managing people, understanding different people, understanding their tendencies, and how to bring out the best in others. And it shows the disciples' full commitment to not just desire, but acting without hesitation. So once Prabhupada's sitting with both Rameshwar Prabhu and Tamalkrishna Maharaj, and they were both leaders of the movement, very strong book distributors. Rameshwar Prabhu was running the LABBT, Tamalkrishna Maharaj is running the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party. And Prabhupada knew that here are two very competitive individuals in the service of Prabhupada. They're both very competitive in serving Prabhupada and distributing books. So he thought he would use that to his advantage and see what would come out of it. So they're both sitting, and Srila Prabhupada starts glorifying Rameshwar Prabhu in front of Tamalkrishna Maharaj. He says, "So, Rameshwar Prabhu is in charge of the LABBT, and they're distributing books like anything. Here are their book numbers. Here is the amount of Lakshmi they brought in. They're emitting this amount of money into the BBT." And he's going on and on, and he knows that Tamalkrishna Maharaj is hearing. He's hearing what's happening, and it might spark something in him. So Prabhupada continues glorifying Rameshwar Prabhu in his book distribution, and just at that moment, Prabhupada looks at Tamalkrishna Maharaj and says, "So, Tamalkrishna, what do you think of this?" And he just pauses. And there was an immediate response from Tamalkrishna Maharaj, and he said, "Prabhupada, what would you like me to do?" And Prabhupada said, "Double it." So without hesitation, without any hesitation, Tamalkrishna Maharaj called for one devotee, "Bring the checkbook." And he took a checkbook, and he said, what was remitted into the BBT account? How much was it?" And I don't remember from the story what the number was, but say it was $10,000. $20,000, writes in the checkbook. He writes a date. "I'm writing a date for 2 months from today. Here you go, Srila Prabhupada. Wait until this date. Give me 2 months' time. I'll have the Lakshmi in our bank account. Then you can deposit the check." This was the kind of without hesitation attitude that devotees had. And this is what pleased Srila Prabhupada so much. When he would give an instruction, he would ask the devotee to do it, and this desire to serve without hesitation was so strong. That's how the movement spread. And it was the same thing with Lord Chaitanya. Rupa Goswami was spending time every single day with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. So much association. You know, he had given up his high political post, he had ran away, he had done so much to get to that point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Go to Vrindavan, write books, establish temples," and he just left. For him, it was the desire to serve was more important than the association, it was more important than anything, and he would do so without hesitation. So this is the spirit. This is the spirit which attracts Krishna's mercy. It's the spirit which attracts spiritual strength, really. And back to the first quote that I shared. "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." It's a universal message. And when we adopt this attitude, only then can we really start sharing Krishna consciousness very powerfully, really. And can we actually begin to practice Krishna consciousness very sincerely also, because if we don't have the support of the Supreme Lord, then really how far can we go? And we can see that Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, they both had the darshan of Krishna. Krishna was right in front of them. So it's not about seeing Krishna, it's not about the darshan of Krishna. But the desire to serve Krishna wasn't there. So there was no spiritual benefit. There was no coming closer to him. Even though he was right there standing in front of them, there was no closeness at all. He could have been miles and miles away, it wouldn't have mattered. But because the Pandavas, specifically Arjuna, is spoken about so much in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, was so intimately connected with Krishna. He was such a dear friend. Krishna has accepted him as family. Krishna has chosen him to be in his blood lineage. But he had all the empowerment in the world. And Arjuna was ready to serve at any moment. He was ready to do anything for Krishna. All the Pandavas were. In fact, I mean, he was put in a situation where he had to kill his own family. Couldn't think of a worse situation. You're seeing all your family members and you're told, okay, kill every single one of them. And of course, he just couldn't do it at first, but he didn't say no, final no. He said, Krishna, I don't understand, I can't. Please, instruct me. It's miserly weakness. He says, Shishyasteham sadi mam tvam prapannam. Now I am your disciple. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. This was the attitude, that even if we feel we can't do anything, that I will take shelter of you, my Lord, because I know that you know what's best for me. And therefore, his desire to serve Krishna was so strong that Krishna gave him that empowerment, and ultimately he fulfilled the Lord's mission and pleased him so much. So my basic point I want to get out here today is that we learn from the Pandavas, we learn from the Goswamis, we learn from Srila Prabhupada, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and as age goes on, this theme will continue, and it's seeking empowerment, mercy, blessings, because that's what gives us the ability to go on. That's what gives us the ability to progress in spiritual life, and ultimately that's what gives us the ability to go back home, back to Godhead. And that comes really first and foremost with a great desire to serve. And if that desire has a mood of, I will do without hesitation, I will serve the instructions of the spiritual master without hesitation, then it becomes full of empowerment. Then we can really serve on the basis that we are pleasing Krishna, that we are trying our hardest and depending on him fully. There is one phrase that I used to, that I heard when I was younger. My sister told me this. I must have been in high school or just starting college. And it really stuck with me. And I think it encapsulates this point of depending on Krishna. It's try your best and let Krishna do the rest. I liked it so much. Because you can just, in every moment of your life, you can think about this. I remember being in school and was unprepared for an exam, perhaps. I was very nervous. So I just think, okay, try my best and let Krishna do the rest. Or even in direct devotional service, and you're chanting and you're very tired and you can't focus, and Krishna, I'm trying my best and I'll let you do the rest. Ultimately, it's him who works through us, who guides us, who empowers us. So it's a very beautiful subject matter. It's a very wonderful part of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'd like to pause there and see if there are any reflections on these points, on these verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, or any questions. Yes, please.
How will you know? Sometimes it seems that Krishna doesn't desire fulfill one's desire in his service. Even I was thinking, and I came up with an example that even Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to become very rich to spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. He tried to make his business so that he could serve Krishna in that way.
Right.
But he wasn't successful.
Right.
So how will one know if that's what is actually Krishna's desire?
Yeah. Really good question. How does one know what's actually Krishna's desire? It's we have to be connected with desire of devotees, specifically the desire of sadhu's desire of our spiritual master and connect with that. And that's a connection to, that's a connection that has to be there on a daily basis. It can't just be that, okay, we think this is the desire of the devotees, or this is my desire to serve the Lord, and I'm attached to this one desire, and I'll try everything to fulfill it. There's a part of Bhagavatam that's earlier, it's in the first canto, it's when Krishna leaves the planet. And I'll just briefly, such a powerful chapter or two, but it's basically Arjuna wandering aimlessly, trying to figure out what happened. Where did Krishna go? He was sent to Dwarka because Yudhishthira Maharaj had heard from Narada Muni, okay, your mission is to serve the mission of the Lord, and when he goes back, then you can also go back. And so they're wondering what happened, and so he sent Arjuna, and he was waiting for 7 months. And he's really anxious. Within these 7 months, Yudhishthira Maharaj could see that there were so many omens that Kali Yuga was coming. And he knew that the only reason Kali Yuga could enter is because Krishna had left the planet. But he didn't want to accept it. And finally, when Arjuna came back, he asked, Arjuna, why are you so brilliant like the sun, yet your body lacks luster? What's happening? And he started probing him different ways. And Arjuna couldn't even look him in the eye. He was just looking on the ground. And you know, he said, perhaps there were women or children or old men who need your help and you couldn't assist them. And he kept going on. And finally he said, or perhaps your best friend, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who you're so intimately connected with, has left this planet. And at that point, he just broke down crying. And this was the case. And then there's a verse, I think it's 115.5. And I have it here. It's really, really nice. And Prabhupada makes a very important statement in the purport there. It's related to what you're saying. He said, because Arjuna had essentially lost his powers. So he said, the power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when his mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required, and they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible even for a great devotee like Arjuna, or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of the ordinary living beings, who are but figs compared to such great souls? The lesson is therefore that no one should be puffed up by his powers, borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obliged to the Lord for such benefactions, and must utilize such power for the service of the Lord. Such power can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord, so the best use of such power and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to make money and use that in service of Krishna, but it was not possible. So any desire we may have, or potency that Krishna gives us, or opportunity, it can be taken away also by him, just as easily as he gives it. So I think for a devotee, it's very important to be flexible in this understanding and not attached or proud of the position or the ability that the Supreme Lord gives us, that we get, and that we're connected with a spiritual guide, our spiritual master, hearing from our spiritual master, from elder disciples, from Siksha Gurus, and understanding that, okay, it's an evolving process, understanding what the desire of the Lord is. And that may change. At one moment, I may have this amount of money or ability or service that I can do, but that may be taken away any moment. Just being connected with that would be my answer. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, please.
When you said that a professor said that he could recognize that it was a miracle, that, was that Professor Burke, do you know?
I don't know. I heard this at a retreat. I heard it in the lecture, and I quoted it from the lecture. So I'm sorry. I don't know.
I just kind of wanted your vision on this, so, because some of some of the older devotees, the way that we lived our lives and continue to live our lives you know, coming to Mangalarti and, you know, just using all our energy in Krishna's service, it's like, it's different now. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, you know, we all lived in the temple. We didn't have to worry about really cooking or anything. Everything was provided. We just were out, you know, preaching mm-hmm. pretty much 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different, just a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, partially I feel that if we had spent more time, you know, developing farmers as Prabhupada wanted, then that could have still been going on, but that really didn't happen. That still is a future
mm-hmm.
goal.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of your generation, the second generation, how do you see things, how do you see things progressing? That's a big question.
Specifically how? Do you mean just in general, or do you refer to something?
Well, I'm kind of
specific.
Speaking in general, and I'm kind of also, you know, speaking to you, like, how do you see your generation, you know, taking up the, you know, taking it up and moving along? How do you see things?
Yeah. It's, I also, like, I flip-flop a little bit in my own mind when it comes to this. There's times where I feel really fired up about becoming more adventurous in Krishna consciousness, becoming more outgoing in terms of preaching and putting ourselves out there and being on the forefront, so to say. And then there's other times where I think of you know, the boiling the milk phrase. Now it's time to boil the milk, and it's time to go deeper into Krishna consciousness. And I'm kind of in between these. I guess currently my mindset is also in the boiling the milk phase. I really feel that naturally, this could be seen as an understatement or just a, you know, kind of seen that it's, I'm overlooking all the hard work it would take to continue Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in a very strong and forward way. But I think we really have to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. I see that with myself, I see that with peers and others in my generation, and I feel that if, as a whole, we're not advancing in Krishna consciousness and really, really advancing in Krishna consciousness, then maybe whatever we do would just be out of the mode of passion, and as generations go on, we become more of a movement that's trying to do something but lacks spiritual substance. So I think it's really important as this generation, this is such an early generation still into the timeline of generations in the ISKCON movement, that it's very important that we set a standard amongst ourselves and others to go very deep into Krishna consciousness so that our children follow and their children follow. And that is seen as a preliminary standard. And naturally, the overflow of that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement and our spreading of Harinam Sankirtan. And I think that's kind of my mood right now, though I feel that that shouldn't be a cop-out to not be actively part of the preaching mission, or to not even be foregoing in temple activities and morning program and such like that, and hide behind the fact that I'm just trying to deepen myself, work on myself first before I do anything else. But I genuinely mean that if that is there, I think it's important not just for our own life, but it sets the standard for the movement going forward. What do you think?
Thank you. I mean, I appreciate that you're studying, because I know what it takes to give a class. So that means that you are trying to go deeply into Krishna consciousness.
Thank you.
So that's great, very grateful for that.
Yeah, thank you.
And hoping that, you know, that, for example, Harinam, you know, Harinam is like quite reduced compared to what it used to be, because in the beginning, it was just like people would do Harinam all day long.
Yeah.
And now once a week, a few people. Yeah, so even if there was a youth Harinam, I know Krishna House they do some. If they did it maybe even, you know, once every 2 months or, you know, something like that, it would just be so enlivening for people to see that. Because the sound vibration just goes everywhere.
It's true.
But anyway, so grateful for your efforts and your vision, and I'm sure Krishna will be empowering you.
Thank you. And to that point, it's true. Also, the the deepening of Krishna consciousness is also in the sharing of it. It's not, these aren't two separate things. I'd like to add that. It's not that, okay, I'm going to stay home and chant, that's one thing, and then I'm going to go out and do an activity to spread the holy name. I think that they're interconnected and you can't separate the two. But on the point of Harinam, yeah, I totally agree. I haven't been much Harinam with all of you, but with the Krishnas, I have go fairly often whenever they go. They haven't been in some time, but usually when the Gator Games happen every Saturday night, we'd go out like at 9 o'clock or after into the Midtown area, and it's just packed with people. It's really nice, yeah. But I agree. Thank you. Yeah, Virgo, please.
Yeah, I'm actually piggybacking off her question.
Sure.
Because I think about, right, Prabhupada came in like the late 60s,
mm-hmm.
and times have changed, the technology's changed, one person mm-hmm. can scale their efforts infinitely more than past back then. And we see Prabhupada did things with books, right, using mm-hmm. books to scale out the message mm-hmm. off of the back of what his spiritual master did.
Mm-hmm.
And also now a big problem that young people have, obviously me kind of fitting in that range,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of times we're getting the influences of the society make it difficult to figure out what it means to even be a man. So we have a bigger problem we deal with mentally. Who mm-hmm. am I? What am I? What is my role? What's right? What's wrong? What's real? What's not real?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, because you said that you're focusing on boiling the milk, getting more deeper in Krishna consciousness, versus just going out and focusing on almost like doing things without fortifying your own internal spiritual self. So what does that mean, going deeper? Like, what does it actually mean to go deeper? And what's the split between service
introspection? Yeah, such a nice question. Thank you. What's your name, Prabhu?
Bhakta Phil.
Phil, nice to meet you, Prabhu. Yeah, it's true. I don't want to make it sound like boiling the milk or quote-unquote going deeper is a separate activity from spreading Krishna consciousness. But I think it's how do I say this? Yeah, I think it's just taking the process of Krishna consciousness very seriously, and that our interactions with Krishna consciousness isn't. If we're taking to a practice of Krishna consciousness, if we're taking to spreading the Krishna consciousness movement without any depth, then ultimately it can become perhaps just a social engagement. It can perhaps just become something we do in the mode of passion, and or something we do to make ourselves feel like we're giving back to a community. Not saying that these aren't bad reasons, these are also, you know, part of human nature and human needs. But if that's all we're doing, and as years pass by, then sure, how much of an effect are we really making, in one sense? But if we are also if we're doing these things in conjunction with knowing that the first and foremost thing is becoming a pure devotee of Krishna, is becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness and trying to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, doing my activities in bhakti, the main activity that comes to mind is chanting of the holy name. If we can really become so serious in that, trying to become absorbed in that activity, alongside, of course, any preaching engagement, but if that it becomes the first and foremost thing, just like it was said in this verse of when Arjuna had lost his ability and the Lord had left. Prabhupada says in the purport, just as the powers were given to him, they were taken away because they were not necessary to go back to Godhead. Such an interesting, it blew me away when I read it. It's so interesting. So it wasn't necessary, but he's fulfilling the mission of the Lord. Why was it not necessary? Ultimately, what you leave this world with is what? What do you leave with? And so ultimately, when we leave with the bhakti in our heart, and we try to develop that as much as possible. So my answer to Mother Sukhada wasn't so much that we ignore the outreach aspect of things, but we have to make sure that the core of it is that we're increasing our bhakti to Krishna. Ooh, many hands. I saw Mother Madhavati first.
Thank you for creating it an enlivening discussion.
Yeah.
Couple of thoughts on this aspect is, one thing is that Srila Prabhupada said, you're distributing these books, are you reading them?
Yeah, yeah.
So he wrote these books for us to read, and reading these books in the consciousness helps you to, it is about going deeper.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada is saying, you know, please read my book so that you can go deeper, and you'll be more empowered when you're distributing them. Another thought came to my mind was Bhaktivinod Thakur's song, Kabhe Habe Bolo Se Dinama. Mm-hmm. And he writes this beautiful song about, you know, being humble. When will the day be mine when I become humble and more tolerant and dance in Navadvip and not care about... And in the very end, he says, when will the day be mine where I have jiva doya, where I feel compassionate towards the other living entities. And so my understanding is that, although, you know, in Krishna consciousness, day one we go out and distribute books, and however, my understanding is that when there is, from doing your own personal bhajan, then the desire to give Krishna to others happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like you have to go deeper in order to be able to come out and give that, be empowered to give what we have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how can we give something when we don't have it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I say this specifically in answer to Mother Sugita's question with my generation, as I'm speaking also on my behalf and people around me, that there's so much natural ability and talent to spread Krishna consciousness. I mean, so much of the ability to do kirtan is just like, you know, you're practically born playing harmonium. You can just lead a nice kirtan so easily, and you can infuse your chanting with bhakti very easily as well. But it's, so the ability is there for certain, but I feel what's the difficulty is that if we just rely on our ability and our sangha, it becomes easily a social activity. Mm-hmm. It becomes something that it's not grounded on something very deeply rooted. Mm-hmm. Even though we can, yes, preach very easily in it, but I think that if we can ground ourselves something that's based in very deeply rooted, again, speaking amongst my peers and myself, then I think that those roots will not just be important for our whole life, but also the future generations of the movement.
Yeah. Appreciate that point. Thank you very much.
A lot of hands. I saw Mother Kadasi first. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for the nice class.
Thank you.
I think I wanted to comment about not living in the temple like Mother Sukada was saying, you know, before everybody lived in the temple and it was easier.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I have experienced is that because for me, I was working with Mother Sukada, and I saw that she was coming. Even though she was working, she was coming to Mangalarti regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And also Madhurya Leela is another, you know, from
right.
Canada. And so that was inspiring to me, to see that they had that dedication and they did it. So if I saw that, okay, if they can do it, that means I can do it also, you know. And and I was thinking what makes the difference is, well, one thing is that the desire to do it. And for me, the desire comes from hearing from Srila Prabhupada, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not like trying to toot my own horn or whatever, mm-hmm. but I know that I'm not like special or anything, but it's just because I listen to Srila Prabhupada a lot, and I hear how he talks about it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, okay, this is important. I see people, you know, like Mother Sukada, for example, who heard from him directly that this mm-hmm. is important, and I see that she does it. I see Yadubar Prabhu, who, you know, is, you know, coming regularly to the morning program for so many years, and so I see so many examples.
Yeah.
So the hearing, seeing the examples, and then the desire develops.
Yeah.
you know, right, and yeah. and I see that it's not impossible, it's not challenging. Even when you have kids, does it mean you don't come to the temple anymore? You can mm-hmm. still come. Mm-hmm. I did that also, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the desire needs to be there, and especially the hearing from yeah. Srila Prabhupada is very, very important. Because yeah. that empowerment yeah. also transfers just yeah. by hearing from yeah. him.
Thank you. I appreciate the point of hearing. Another secret.
I was just going to say, in partnering with Mata Mati here, mm-hmm. that, you know, so, you know, of course, reading the books and going deeper, but also, I remember just from the very beginning, joining, and then hearing what Prabhupada wanted, and then immediately going out on Sankirtan, even though I knew so little in mm-hmm. reality, mm-hmm. but like you said, the empowerment yeah. is phenomenal, right. you know, so once, even though you may not feel like it, or you may not think, oh, I'm not really ready to share.
Yeah.
When you just take that step,
yeah.
and then you can feel yeah, it. Yeah. You know, you can feel yeah. yourself sharing with some in Krishna consciousness, some realizations that you didn't even know were there. You didn't know you had them.
Okay.
And that's when, like, Nimitta Matram, you know, Krishna says, just become an instrument. He told Arjuna. So sometimes you may feel shy to give someone a book, or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
in so many ways a little reticent to right. share yourself, but when you do it, then your whole class is about empowerment. You feel that empowerment. So it's both, you know, it's both becoming yeah. filled and also, you know, just taking your spiritual master's order.
Yeah. Any other points?
I mean, very nice point of discussed. I was thinking, there's a verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 7.99. Prabhupada asked a question. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivering thousands of people. Nowadays, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also delivering many people through his disciple. I don't know who he was. It was Prabhupada, but he didn't mention his name in the purport. Then he says, what is that means, delivering people? Then he answered, he said, this potency, the verse goes, it's in the verse you'll see. Katakhan rahi prabhu tare alingiya vidai karila tare sakti sancharila. That initiation or delivering means that the transformation, purification, and satisfaction, empowerment coming from the heart of Guru, from Krishna to Guru to conditioned soul. Then it is delivered. Now, otherwise it is not delivered. So then question comes, what are those potencies? What are those symptoms? Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that, yes, many are practicing, but they also should have a standard of measurement. How am I advancing or not? So there are nine symptoms. I'm sure you all know that the bhava has the nine symptoms. Skanti abhartha kalattam vyakti manasunnata. But one of the easiest way, that four symptoms must be watched by every devotee. Because if you ask me, Prabhu, how do you know how much advancement or shakti within you? How do I know? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur give a challenge on that sloka, when someone is advancing, first is dajna, no opposition to the command of my master. Mm-hmm. Whatever Prabhupada said, I'm going to do it. I will not think anything else, I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. This is dajna. Then daya, tenderness towards the other living being. It's natural. Advancement means it's natural. Mm-hmm. If it is not coming, means I'm going but not really advancing. There's something lacking. So this is how I see the empowerment can be measured. Mm-hmm. If I'm advancing like this, then of course manadena and the list goes on beautifully. Mm-hmm. But thank you, I appreciate you. Wonderful class. It was very nice.
Thank you for your discussion. I mean, this is something to continuously think about and talk about. Oh, still one more hand. Sorry, please go ahead.
Yeah, this discussion has got me thinking. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the essence of all religion is Namruchi, as you are stressing that need to really develop the taste for chanting and get absorbed in chanting. Vaishnav Seva, of course, that means you need to associate with the Vaishnavas to know what the Seva is you can do, but also Seva to your Guru. And Jiva Doya, mercy to the Jivas. So some of this requires going beyond our comfort zone.
Yeah.
But all three are essential.
Yeah.
So to balance our life in such a way that we can, we'll include all three, use it as a checklist.
Yeah.
You know, am I really increasing my attentiveness in chanting? What service am I doing for the Vaishnavas? Or even assisting someone who does another service?
Right.
And Jiva Doya, just put yourself out there on a Harinam and Krishna will use you as an instrument.
Yeah.
And then that will encourage you to even chant more seriously to be his instrument.
Mm.
It just works back and forth, the holy name
and
going out also, you know, it really feeds each other.
Yeah, it's true. They all support one another. And we make an effort in one, and Krishna gives us the empowerment, he gives us the ability to excel in the other. So ultimately we're dependent on him to make those three come together. Thank you. Gantarashima Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.